Jamie Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I cannot believe myself for sure. I cannot yet comprehend that this is real and that Allah is with us.
Tears of joy as Egypt releases longtime political prisoner Ala Abdel Fattah as he reunites with his family in Cairo. Other than for a few months, Ala has been in prison since 2013 on various charges, including spreading false news, quote unquote. His family and supporters say he was targeted for his pro-democracy activism. He was a leading voice in the 2011 Arab Spring protests that toppled the Mubarak dictatorship and was repeatedly targeted by the current president, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. We'll speak with Ala's aunt, the renowned author Adef Souef, and with journalist Sharif Abdelkaddous, who knew him well. Then to Chicago, where ICE agents threw a Democratic congressional candidate to the ground.
This past Friday, I was assaulted by ICE alongside some other protesters. That day was probably the most harrowing day of protest I have ever attended in my life. Partly because anything we dealt with didn't hold a candle to what the people trapped inside that facility are enduring.
Then California Governor Gavin Newsom signs the No Secret Police Act into law, banning all law enforcement, including ICE agents, from covering their faces while conducting raids.
I'll be signing a bill, the first in the nation, saying enough. To ICE, unmask. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of?
We'll speak with the ACLU of Southern California and with New York Congressmember Nydia Velazquez. She's introduced the No Masks for ICE Act into Congress. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli strikes on the Gaza Strip killed at least 38 Palestinians and injured another 190 over the past 24 hours. An estimated 500,000 Palestinians remain in Gaza City, despite an advance by Israeli tanks, paratroopers, explosive-laden robots, and remote-controlled vehicles. Among the latest victims is a 5-year-old Palestinian girl named Noor, whose parents frantically searched the rubble of their Gaza City home Monday after it was flattened by an Israeli strike.
Bring me Noor. In 7 years, I've only had her. I do not have any children except her. Noor is under the rubble. Where is Noor?
Noor was found under the debris, but later died in an ambulance. Her family had fled their home in the Zaytun neighborhood after it was destroyed in a previous strike. Meanwhile, Gaza's health ministry is warning patients face certain death at hospitals that have nearly exhausted fuel supplies needed for generators that power life-saving medical equipment. France has formally recognized a Palestinian state for the first time. President Emmanuel Macron declared France's recognition Monday as the United Nations convened its General Assembly for the 80th consecutive year.
Le temps est venu.
The time has come.
C'est pourquoi.
This is why.
Fidèle à l'engagement historique.
Loyalty to my country's historic commitment to the Middle East.
Pour la paix entre le
for peace among Israeli people.
Et le peuple palestinien.
And the Palestinian people.
Je déclare que la France
I declare that France recognizes today the state of Palestine.
Andorra, Belgium, Luxembourg, Malta, and Monaco also declared their recognition of a Palestinian state Monday. With France's recognition, the United States is now the only member of the UN Security Council not to recognize Palestine. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu slammed the declarations as a, quote, huge reward to terrorism, unquote, and said a Palestinian state, quote, will not happen. In Italy, tens of thousands of people took to the streets of dozens of cities Monday as Italian labor unions led a nationwide 24-hour general strike to demand an end to Israel's assault on Gaza. In Rome, tens of thousands joined a march that blocked a major highway. There were similar scenes in Bologna, where student protesters occupied university lecture halls. In Venice, police fired water cannons to disperse protesters, while dock workers led marches in Genoa and other port cities seeking to block weapons exports to Israel. This is Genoa resident Dario Rossi.
Genoa is a port and therefore the ideal place to try and stop this trade in arms that are fueling genocide. These weapons should not be allowed to pass because our laws prohibit trading arms with countries that are at war and violate human rights. Yet they pass through unhindered. Fortunately, we have a very combative group of dock workers here who are fighting tooth and nail and dragging the entire citizenry into this protest, which is spreading nationally and internationally.
The U.S. Supreme Court is allowing President Trump to fire the Federal Trade Commission's last remaining Democrat, Rebecca Kelly Slaughter, and is set to hear oral arguments in December on whether federal law grants presidents the power to fire officials of independent agencies. In her dissent, Justice Elena Kagan wrote, quote, President Trump may now remove, so says the majority, though Congress said differently, any member he wishes for any reason or no reason at all. And he may thereby extinguish the agency's bipartisanship and independence, Kagan wrote. ABC has announced Jimmy Kimmel's show will return to the airwaves tonight, after it was indefinitely suspended following FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr's threats to revoke the broadcast licenses of affiliates over comments Kimmel made about Charlie Kirk's assassin. In a statement, the Walt Disney Company, which owns ABC, said, quote, last Wednesday, we made the decision to suspend production on the show to avoid further inflaming a tense situation at an emotional moment for our country. It's a decision we made because we felt some of the comments were ill-timed and thus insensitive. We've spent the last days having thoughtful conversations with Jimmy, and after those conversations, we reached the decision to return the show on Tuesday, unquote. This statement comes as a movement to boycott Disney Plus, Hulu, and other Disney-owned subscription services was gathering steam in the wake of Kimmel's suspension. Meanwhile, Sinclair Broadcast Group, which owns dozens of ABC affiliates, said it will not air Jimmy Kimmel Live on its stations and will replace it with news programming. On Monday, unions led a rally for free speech outside Jimmy Kimmel's studio in Hollywood. Joining the protest was California Democratic Congressmember Laura Friedman.
Is the Trump administration deciding what you can watch on television, what jokes he thinks you should be able to hear? He does not want dissent, and he's not above using the highest powers of the law to clamp down on dissent. That's un-American, it's dangerous, and it's something that we need to raise the alarm about.
President Trump's proposing sweeping changes to how children are vaccinated, saying the MMR vaccine should be broken up into separate shots. At a White House press conference flanked by Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Centers for Medicare and Medicaid head Dr. Mehmet Oz, Trump said children should instead receive separate shots for measles, mumps and rubella. Though he apparently forgot the name rubella. Trump also recommended removing aluminum from vaccines and said parents should wait until their children are 12 to vaccinate against hepatitis B, falsely stating the viral infection is only sexually transmitted, even though it can also be spread through open wounds, contaminated objects during birth or through breastfeeding. Trump said his recommendations were, quote, based on what I feel, unquote. He made the remarks while promoting unproven claims that vaccines and the common painkiller, acetaminophen, cause autism, despite decades of research showing no proven links.
Effective immediately, the FDA will be notifying physicians that the use of acetaminophen, is that okay? Which is basically commonly known as Tylenol during pregnancy, can be associated with a very increased risk of autism. So taking Tylenol is not good.
The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists called the announcement irresponsible, adding, quote, "It's highly unsettling that our federal health agencies are willing to make an announcement that'll affect the health and well-being of millions of people without the backing of reliable data," unquote. In immigration news, hundreds of people who were once detained at the troubled immigration jail in the Florida Everglades, dubbed Alligator Alcatraz, have disappeared. The Miami Herald reports about two-thirds of the 1,800 immigrants who were held there in July have gone missing from ICE's online database, with their families unable to locate them. Earlier this month, a federal appeals court ruled the jail could continue to operate despite reports of abuse. The Trump administration's trying to limit the enforcement of the Fair Housing Act. That's according to the New York Times review of dozens of emails, memos, and other internal communications, as well as interviews with current and former workers at the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD. Speaking to the Times, lawyers say they've been blocked from communicating with clients without approval from a Trump appointee. Staff members also detail how their fair housing work is being dismissed as an offshoot of DEI. In response, Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren said her office is reviewing documents shared by whistleblowers inside HUD.
Documents detail how the Trump administration apparently views the office that enforces civil rights protections in housing as a, quote, optics problem. Imagine thinking that defending black families from being denied a mortgage because they're black, or protecting a mom and her kids from living with an abusive father, is a, quote, optics problem. Imagine thinking that it's an optics problem to help the dad with a bad knee whose landlord refuses to install a handrail on the stairs.
Prominent Egyptian blogger Ala Abdel Fattah has been released from prison along with several other prisoners following the announcement of presidential pardons Monday in Egypt. Ala spent most of the last 12 years in and out of prison due to his political activism. Ala Abdel Fattah reunited with his mother, Leila Swaif, who'd been on a hunger strike for months demanding her son's freedom. Also celebrating Ala's release Monday at their home in Cairo was his sister, Sana Saif.
We wish for this moment to come for all the families of political detainees. I'm praying that this is the end of tragedies in our family and that Ala is allowed to travel and to be with his son.
We'll have more on Ala's pardon and release later in the broadcast. In related news, a human rights investigation uncovered a mass grave in Egypt's North Sinai, which researchers believe was used by the Egyptian military to bury the bodies of victims of extrajudicial killings. The Colombian government's terminated arms purchases from the United States, its largest military partner, as tensions rise with the Trump administration over accusations Colombia is failing to combat cocaine trafficking. Colombian President Gustavo Petro denounced the U.S. intervention, saying his government, quote, will not be blackmailed and that more cocaine has been seized under his administration than any previous president. In more news from Colombia, 12 former soldiers have been sentenced to 8 years of reparations work over their role in the extrajudicial executions of 135 civilians during Colombia's U.S.-backed conflict. The killings were part of what became known as the false positive scandal when U.S.-backed Colombian soldiers massacred thousands of civilians falsely counting them as rebel fighters. The White House said Monday it had dismissed an offer by Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro to engage in direct talks with President Trump aimed at de-escalating a U.S. naval buildup near Venezuela's coast. The brush-off came after Trump declared he'd ordered the bombing of another vessel he alleged was trafficking drugs to the United States. Trump shared video on his social media site Truth Social of an apparent airstrike on a speedboat, writing in all caps, quote, "Stop selling fentanyl, narcotics, and illegal drugs in America and committing violence and terrorism against Americans," unquote. Trump did not specify where the bombing occurred, the name of the alleged terrorist organization involved, or who conducted the attack. The strikes appear to have occurred outside any declared war zone, targeting civilians who pose no immediate threat. Legal experts say such extrajudicial killings violate both U.S. and international law and constitute war crimes. and the International Criminal Courts charged former Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte with three counts of crimes against humanity. Duterte is accused of orchestrating the extrajudicial killings of dozens of people between 2013 and 18 as part of his devastating so-called war on drugs. The UN estimates over 8,600 people were killed during Duterte's rule, with some estimates suggesting the true toll could be three times higher. Last year, Duterte admitted under oath he oversaw a death squad of gangsters while he served as mayor of the southern city of Davao. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York. Juan Gonzalez is in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, Egypt's most prominent political prisoner, Ali Abdel Fattah, has been released and reunited with his family after being granted a presidential pardon on Monday, along with several other prisoners. Ala is 43 years old. He spent most of the last 12 years of his life in prison. The writer, blogger, and political dissident was a leading voice in the 2011 Arab Spring protests that toppled the Mubarak dictatorship and has been repeatedly targeted by the current authoritarian government of President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. Most recently, he was sentenced to 5 years in prison for a Facebook post. That sentence ended last September, but authorities refused to release him until now, saying his 2 years of pretrial detention didn't count. Monday's pardon comes after years of international pressure led by his family to free Ala, including in the United Kingdom, where he also holds citizenship. Both Ala and his mother, Leila Swaif, went on extended hunger strike to draw attention to his case. This is one of Ala's sisters, Sana Swaif, speaking at the family home after Ala's release.
I cannot believe myself for sure. I cannot yet comprehend that this is real and that Ala is with us. I cannot believe that I'm seeing him here at home among us normally. I guess it will feel more real when we go to sleep, wake up, and find him present, and when his son arrives here from traveling. I'm really happy.
Sana is one of Ala's two sisters, and this is Ala's mother, Professor Leila Swaif.
Despite our great joy, the biggest joy is when there are no political prisoners. The big and real joy is when there are no political prisoners.
We go now to London, where we're joined with Leila Swaif's sister, the renowned writer Adef Swaif. She is Ala Abdel Fattah's aunt, the author of several books, including The Map of Love, which was shortlisted for the Booker Prize, and Cairo, My City, Our Revolution. And here in New York, we're joined by Sharif Abdelkaddous, award-winning journalist, Middle East, North Africa editor at Dropsite News. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Adef, if you can share your feelings today, just 24 hours after it was announced that your nephew was pardoned.
Amy, hi. Hello to you and to all your viewers. I really don't even know how to describe my feelings. It's a tremendous relief. We keep saying, is this over? Can we stop now? I haven't seen Ala yet. I've spoken to him on the phone. So tremendous, tremendous relief. And also a lot of a very active hope that this is the beginning of the release of a lot of other political prisoners as well.
You're showing images of your sister, the Cairo University math professor, Leila Swaif, hugging her son. She and Ala himself almost died in their hunger strike. She did it in Britain, thinking that was the pressure point that would bring him home. The British prime minister putting pressure on Sisi, and of course, Ala in prison. What about their health?
Well, they're looking, I think, pretty haggard, pretty gaunt. This is masked to an extent. maybe even highlighted really by how clearly happy and joyful they are. But I think that getting back to health, getting back to a good weight is really paramount for them both. Now, they've been under a lot of stress, and hunger strikes are, you know, hunger strikes are very, very difficult, and Layla's lasted for so very long.
And Adif, I wanted to ask you, for those of our audience who are not familiar with your nephew's case, could take us back to he was in prison twice under Sisi. Could you talk about the reasons the government gave and the fight to free him?
Well, he went to trial twice, and both times he received 5-year sentences. The first time, which was in 2014, was actually the culmination of before President Sisi. It was also President Mohamed Morsi, and before that, President Mubarak. Ali has been in prison under every system that has ruled in Egypt. But these two long stretches, 2014 and 2019, the first one was for taking part in a silent protest outside the Senate or Parliament to urge them not to allow military trials for civilians. He was there for 10 minutes. And he was arrested 2 days later and charged with unlawful protest and even with organizing it, and sentenced to 5 years. And I think there were 13 other people, or maybe even 23 in that case with him, and they all received jail sentences. He served that sentence from 2014 until March 2019. And when he came out, he was under a surveillance order, which meant he had to report every evening at 6 p.m. to his local police station and spend the night there. And go home at 6 in the morning. And he did that for 6 months. And then in September 2019, he was arrested again, charged with a menu of charges, and then eventually 2 years later tried on a charge of spreading false information. What he had done was he had reposted a post about a prisoner dying in custody, and the post was truthful. The prisoner had died in custody. Ali reposted it and was charged and was tried and was sentenced to 5 years. The 5 years ended September last year, and he was not released. And at that point, Layla, his mother, decided that that things couldn't wait any longer, really, that more than 11 years of her son's life had been taken from him, and she started her hunger strike. And now, a year later, we're here celebrating his release with tremendous relief.
Well, it certainly is a relief for your family, but as Layla mentioned in her statement, there are thousands, some people say from 20 to 60,000 political prisoners still in Egypt. What about the... Could you talk about the failure of the rest of the world to put the pressure on the Egyptian government to release these people?
Well, the various human rights organizations, the international human rights organizations, are actually doing a lot of work on political prisoners in Egypt. And, of course, our hope is that you know, the release of somebody as high profile as Ali would persuade the Egyptian government to open the doors to other prisoners as well. And particularly really at this moment when Egypt is having such an external issue with what is happening in Gaza, in Palestine, and when the Egyptian government is actually aligned with the wishes of the Egyptian people to not allow the forced displacement of the Palestinians. And so this is probably a very good moment for that alignment to actually be translated into releases for a lot of political prisoners.
Adif Swift, you were the first family member, right, he talked to. Can you explain the confusion yesterday when your sister, Professor Layla Sway Fonsana, his sister, trucked out to the prison thinking they would greet him there, but he wasn't there?
Well, yeah, this is a kind of like dramatic comic ending we hope, ending to this story. Yesterday morning, the presidential pardon that we had all been waiting for was signed, and the press covered it. So we learned that had happened, and Ali's lawyer posted it. And so Leila and Saneh got into a car with a couple of other friends and drove to the prison to be there to welcome him when he was released. They knew, of course, that there was a process that had to happen before he was released, but they couldn't just stay home. So they drove off to the prison, which is about an hour and a half away from Cairo, along the desert road towards the north coast. And so all day, they were waiting outside the prison. There were friends waiting at a nearby gas station. We were waiting here. Everybody was just spending the day waiting. And we knew that the process through which the release would actually happen was taking place, but we had no idea how long it would take. And word was that it wouldn't happen that night. It would probably be tomorrow, i.e. today. But Leila was not giving up and was insistent that she would wait outside the prison in case they released him. Well, what actually happened was that at about 11 p.m., I got a phone call from a number that I didn't recognize. I didn't answer it. And then I got a message from that same number saying, "Answer me, this is Ali." And I couldn't believe it. So I called him and he said, it's Ali. Ahdef, where are you? I said, where are you? He said, yeah, I'm out. I haven't moved, but where are you? He said, I'm outside the house and I can't get in. Where's my mom? I said, well, your mom is at the prison gates waiting for you. So then we called my brother, who went round and opened, unlocked the door for him, and friends started coming round, and we called Leila and Saneh, and they turned round and drove back to meet him. So basically, yeah, the process had happened, and he'd been driven out, and they hadn't noticed, and he'd been driven from the prison the hour and a half to his local police station, went into the police station. The police station drove him to his house and said, are you fine here? And he said, yes. And they left him there and he rang the doorbell and nobody opened because his mom was at the prison gates.
I mean, this is just remarkable. After all these years, more than a decade, Sharif, you know Ali well, you've interviewed him. He was a leader of Tahrir Square, of the Arab Spring in Egypt. His mom going to Britain to put pressure there, seeing that within Egypt, she didn't seem to succeed in securing his release. So if the British government, talk about that, what ultimately happened, both Leila Swaif and Ala are British Egyptian citizens.
Yeah, let me just first say that Ala's release from prison is a moment of light in this time of darkness. And his freedom is a testament to the power of hope, of resilience, of struggle, and ultimately of solidarity and love, the love of his family who fought and sacrificed so much, and the love of one's chosen family, Ala's friends and comrades who around the world campaigned tirelessly and fought for years and never gave up. When I speak about his family, I'm talking about Ahdef, talking about his cousin, Omar Robert Hamilton, who helped spearhead the campaign for him, his sisters, Mona and Saneh. You know, Saneh spent over 3 years in prison, much of it being put behind bars for advocacy around her brother. But perhaps most of all, for his mother, Leila Swaif, who sacrificed herself. She sacrificed her body, the body that gave birth to Ali, and went on hunger strike last year that lasted over 9 months, that really brought her to the doorstep of death. And her willingness to put her life on the line for her son's freedom, for her son's life, is what really pressured the British government to really act and negotiate on a real level. So what happened was, Ahdef mentioned the different imprisonments, and when Ali was sentenced in December of 2021, to 5 years. A couple months later, he began a hunger strike. And the family announced that they had obtained British citizenship for Ali to get them out of what they called their impossible ordeal, because it didn't seem like the Egyptian government was ever going to let him go. And they decided that they needed the British government to then pressure the Egyptian government to let him out. Alaa was on hunger strike for over 200 days when Egypt hosted the climate conference in Sharm el-Sheikh, UN COP conference that you covered, Amy. And timed to coincide with the first day of the conference, he announced that he was going to go on a water strike. And this brought to the forefront at the climate conference Egypt's, Alaa's case himself, but Egypt's dismal rights record. And I think for the first time at a UN climate conference, inextricably tied climate justice to human rights in a very profound way.